It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. preparing new sanctions for Russia and search continues for missing after South Korean ferry sinks. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. Top diplomats from Ukraine, Russia, the European Union, and the United States have agreed on a set of measures to ease mounting tensions in eastern Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, speaking Thursday in Geneva, said the measures include disarming pro-Russian militants occupying buildings in eastern Ukraine and the return of the buildings to their legitimate owners. A joint statement from the four powers says amnesty will be granted to protesters who surrender weapons and leave the buildings, except for those found guilty of capital crimes. Leaflets ordering Jews in eastern Ukraine to register with a self-proclaimed local authority have drawn the condemnation of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. As VOA's Kent Klein reports, Jewish organizations also are denouncing the action.
Jewish groups in eastern Ukraine say official-looking documents were circulated late Tuesday in the city of Donetsk, calling on Jews to register with the Nationalities Commissioner and pay $50 or lose their citizenship and be deported. The leaflets were said to be handed out by three people wearing ski masks and carrying Russian flags near the synagogue in Donetsk. The pro-Russian Donetsk Republic denies any involvement. It says the leaflets were fake. Pro-Russian gunmen have seized Ukrainian government buildings in several eastern towns and cities. Ukrainian troops are conducting operations to retake the buildings. Kent Klein, VOA News, Washington.
South Korean rescuers have fought strong currents and murky waters in their search for 282 people missing after a ferry capsized off the country's southern coast. Coast Guard officials say 25 people are confirmed dead, although the death toll is expected to rise sharply. A total of 179 passengers have been rescued. It is unclear if anyone is alive inside the boat, which is almost completely submerged in water that is only 12 degrees Celsius. Keep up to date on rescue efforts at voanews.com. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has held an emergency meeting with his top security officials in the wake of a string of deadly attacks and the abduction of more than 100 schoolgirls. He also met with some of the state governors on Thursday in the capital, Abuja. The meeting did not include governors from the opposition All Progressive Congress Party, although some represent regions hardest hit by the recent unrest. Officials say the Nigerian capital has been secured for the World Economic Forum for Africa next month. Heather Murdoch has more from Abuja.
The Nigerian capital is simultaneously recovering from a bombing that killed 75 people in the suburbs on Monday and preparing for the World Economic Forum for Africa, which is expected to draw more than 1,000 delegates, including many heads of state. Minister of National Planning Ambassador Bashir Yuguda said Thursday that there is no need for concern.
Security will be beefed up. The security of the delegates coming, Nigeria is guaranteeing their security.
Three states in Nigeria's northeast have been under emergency rule for almost a year after President Goodluck Jonathan said Islamist insurgents known as Boko Haram had captured territories, threatening the country's sovereignty. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned a deadly attack on a United Nations compound housing civilians and UN peacekeepers in South Sudan. UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric called the attack on a location where civilians are under UN protection a serious escalation. He also said any attack on peacekeepers is unacceptable and constitutes a war crime. The trial of radical Muslim cleric Abu Hamza al-Masri has opened in New York, with federal prosecutors describing the fiery 55-year-old imam as using the cover of religion to conceal his role in a global campaign of terrorism. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, the influential Nobel Prize-winning author of 100 Years of Solitude and Love and The Times of Cholera, has died. He was 87. And the chief United Nations investigator probing human rights abuses in North Korea is urging the world body to refer official findings on conditions in the reclusive communist state to the International Criminal Court for prosecution. Reporting from Washington, Bill Michaels, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN condemns an attack on its compound in South Sudan as the government in Juba promises an immediate investigation.
The government of South Sudan condemns, in the strongest possible terms, the senseless violence and death of its citizens and calls upon members of civil population and enemies to start not to take the law into their hands.
Brigadier General Malak Ayuan is Director of Information for the Sudan People's Liberation Army. South Africa's ruling ANC faces defections ahead of May's 7th election. Guinea-Bissau goes to a presidential runoff election next month. And Zambia's youth and sports minister faces alleged corruption investigation.
Let me just assure you and reaffirm to you that the Commission has always worked tirelessly and professionally against any issue of corruption that is brought to its attention.
Timothy Muno is spokesman for Zambia's Anti-Corruption Commission. The death toll from West Africa's Ebola has risen to 135, and studies show that eating processed meat raises colorectal cancer risk. Those stories plus Mark Omar. Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned a deadly attack on a United Nations compound housing civilians and UN peacekeepers in South Sudan. He said any attack on peacekeepers is unacceptable and constitutes a war crime. Officials say armed youths Thursday overran the compound in Bo, the capital of Jonglei State, and opened fire on internally displaced civilians. Mugumi Davis Rakaringe of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
Neither government nor UN officials could confirm how the fighting started in Bor. William Oyol is a health worker living inside the UNMISS compound in Bor, who says he has been helping treat the injured in today's fighting. According to Oyol, more than 60 people living inside the camp were killed. That statement could not be confirmed by VOA.
Those who are dead, they are 61, and the wounded are 273. It's not like the youth that are asking the UN to open the door by force. The UNMISS feel they start shooting the UNMISS, and UNMISS have no mandate to shoot them.
Oyol says most people are too scared to come out of hiding. Ayen Dengror was one of the organizers of the 5,000 youth who demonstrated outside the UNMISS compound.
When the Bente were being captured by a rebel loyal to Riek Machar, these people in UN came to celebrate because the Bente were being captured by rebels. This is why the youth of Bor community, they say why these people they celebrate in our land and they are here.
Ror says the demonstrators did not fire any weapons. He says they were demanding that UNMISS expel the people who were celebrating from Bor, and says the first shots were fired from people inside the camp, though he could not tell if it was UN peacekeepers or displaced people living inside the compound. Bior Kwer, health worker at Bor Hospital, says they are also providing treatment for people outside the compound who were shot. He says at least 2 people are dead. He says the International Committee of the Red Cross transferred 3 people in critical condition to Juba for treatment, along with several others.
So in total there were 16, 2 is dead, 14 are wounded. But we are hearing that there are still more bodies outside the UNMISS compound.
Acting UNMISS spokesperson Joe Contreras says they are still waiting for a report from Bor. He says he can only confirm that armed youth were demonstrating outside the compound this morning.
Well, any time that happens, that's obviously going to be a source of concern and preoccupation for anyone who is interested in the protection of civilians from imminent threats of physical violence and the restoration of peace throughout South Sudan.
Sudan People's Liberation Army Director of Information, Brigadier General Malak Ayuen, told SSTV he condemns the violence in the camp.
The demonstrators managed to penetrate into the United Nations mission compound and collide with the IDPs. The government of South Sudan condemns, in the strongest possible terms, the senseless violence and death of its citizens and calls upon members of civil population and enemies to start not to take the law into their hands. The government will investigate the matter and will bring the culprit to book.
Army spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre called the incident unfortunate and says the army will launch an immediate investigation to determine who started the fighting and who is responsible for killing civilians. For VOA News, I am Gumedeus Ruakarinj in Juba.
Zambia's Anti-Corruption Commission has launched an investigation into alleged financial malfeasance and abuse of office against Youth and Sports Minister Chishimba Kambwili. Timothy Muno, spokesman for the commission, says the minister is alleged to have instructed the Youth and Sports Ministry to run advertisements in the Times of Zambia and the Daily Mail, both local newspapers, to congratulate him for obtaining a bachelor's degree in development studies at Copperstone University. Muno tells reporter Peter Clarty the commission is conducting the investigation in an unbiased and professional manner.
We are investigating a matter that has reached our office against the cabinet minister, particularly the Minister of Youth and Sport. And it is about a number of adverts that were aired or published in two daily papers here, congratulating him on his achievements for attaining some degree certification from a local university. And the allegations are that he directed the ministry to pay for those adverts or to have those adverts issued. So we have those allegations and we have instituted the investigation.
Was this a tip-off to begin the investigation or this was an official request from the government itself to begin the investigation?
I'm not too sure of the genesis of the investigation, but I believe it could have come as a tip-off to the ACC.
Since the investigation began, what has been the reaction of Zambians?
Got to the Transparency International Zambia issuing statement, and well, there's been wide publicity about the matter, and we're yet to see how the reaction comes through. But we anticipate that there will be some reaction.
You've heard some Zambia politicians saying that the investigation will not go anywhere, and this is just a publicity stunt, among other issues. What is the stance of the Anti-Corruption Commission?
Let me just assure you and reaffirm to you that the Commission has always worked tirelessly and professionally against any issue of corruption that is brought to its attention or which it comes across, and we have thoroughly and professionally addressed those issues to their logical conclusion, and we will continue doing so. You know, some of the cases on corruption are, in most cases, very complicated and take a little bit of time, and public are sometimes not patient to see them come through.
Once the investigation is done, what happens next in this particular instance?
Any investigation, we will always want to find out whether those allegations that have come to our attention have any evidence or have any iota of truth in them, because it is our interest to establish whether those allegations actually have any substance in them. And so soon after establishing if there's any evidence to support those allegations, we then proceed to get consent to prosecute, and then we go to court. But if there's nothing, then the person who's given such information is informed of the outcome of our investigations.
Timothy Muno is spokesman for Zambia's Anti-Corruption Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. As South Africa's powerful ruling African National Congress Party hits 20 years in power, it is bleeding loyalists, including big-name supporters who helped the party when it was banned by the apartheid regime. The growing group of defectors says it is tired of the corruption in the ANC and wants more done to improve the lives of ordinary South Africans. From Johannesburg, viewers Anita Powell hears from some of the discontents.
Justice Makakula knows that the African National Congress is the party that won him the freedom he enjoys in today's South Africa. He was born just before the death of the racist apartheid system and says he remembers well the awful treatment that he endured as a young black South African, and then, on that historic election day in 1994, how everything changed. But in the last 20 years, persistent inequality, widespread complaints about the ANC-led government's failures to provide basic services, and a series of embarrassing scandals around President Jacob Zuma have led many South Africans to disavow the party they fought for during the nation's darkest days. A new campaign headed by former ANC stalwarts is calling on citizens to vote against the party in May, or to intentionally spoil their ballots to show their dissatisfaction. Makakula is part of this growing demographic, the disgusted voter. Except, he says, he plans to skip the polls entirely.
I'm not going to vote, to be honest with you. I'm not going to vote. I'm just going to go on with my life because my life is more important than everything I got.
He is not alone, says journalist and analyst Khadija Patel, who runs a website called SA Votes, which tracks trends around this election and has surveyed tens of thousands of voters.
we're hearing a lot of South Africans telling us that instead of changing, especially ANC voters, voters who have previously voted for the ANC, we're hearing from them that they're not voting at all in this election because they don't see their vote to have made any difference. So they find the whole exercise of voting rather futile.
Patel also says she has picked up on another related trend.
What is interesting here is that instead of going or shipping over their vote to any of the opposition parties, instead they are choosing not to vote at all, which, I mean, so I mean, a lot could be said here then of the weakness of the opposition in South Africa, somewhat of a growing disenchantment with the ANC and indeed with the political process in South Africa.
Makakula again illustrates this trend perfectly. At 26 years old and without steady employment, he is in the crosshairs of a rising political party that was formed out of disgust for the ANC, the far-left Economic Freedom Fighters. But Makakula says he has little faith in that party's key figure, expelled ANC youth leader Julius Malema.
I'm going to vote Malema, and after that, what Malema's going to do? He's going to betray every one of us, you know? So, like, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to keep on, like, shut up, not vote for everyone, just go for my life.
No one expects the ANC to do anything as drastic as lose at the polls. The party has won a consistent majority since its debut election in 1994 under Nelson Mandela. The ANC maintained that level, never going over 70%, in subsequent elections. But some critics say the end is near. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's Friday, April 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Guinea-Bissau is headed to a presidential runoff election next month that will pit the candidate of the former ruling party against an independent who is seen as having strong support in the military. Viewers and Luke has more from our West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
Para a segunda volta, temos os candidatos José Mário Vaz.
Electoral Commission President Augusto Mendes announced the provisional results of Sunday's presidential and parliamentary elections. José Mário Vaz got just over 40% of votes. He will now advance to a runoff election against the second-place finisher, Nuno Gomes Nabiam, who garnered 25% of votes. Vaz is the candidate of the PAIGC, the country's largest political party. He is a former finance minister who also served as mayor of the capital, Bissau. Nabiam broke off from the country's second-largest party, the PRS, to run as an independent candidate. He is the former head of the Civil Aviation Authority and is seen as the military's candidate. He was also backed by ex-president Kumba Yala, who died earlier this month. Soldiers disrupted the country's last attempt at a presidential runoff in April 2012. When it looked like the PAIGC candidate, ex-Prime Minister Carlos Gomez Jr., would defeat Mr. Yala. Mr. Gomez had pledged to reform the military. He remains in exile in Portugal. Guinea-Bissau voted in the calm Sunday. International observers saluted what they said was a high voter turnout. The Electoral Commission hasn't yet released that number. Provisional results show the PAIGC dominating the parliamentary vote, winning 55 seats out of a total 100. The PRS came in a close second with 41 seats. Candidates have 48 hours to contest results. Authorities are then expected to publish final results within the week. The presidential runoff election will be set for 21 days after the publication of first-round final results. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
The World Health Organization says the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has risen to at least 135. In a statement Thursday, the WHO says Guinea's health ministry had reported a total of 122 deaths, while 13 deaths had been reported by Liberian health officials. As VOA Steve Baragona reports, a new study says the strain of Ebola virus in West Africa may have been circulating there undetected for some time.
This is the first reported outbreak of Ebola in West Africa. But the new study in the New England Journal of Medicine says this strain of the virus may not be new to the area. Researchers from Africa and Europe compared viral DNA from this outbreak to previous episodes. They confirmed that it's a member of the Zaire species, which kills most of its victims. Strains of that virus have caused outbreaks previously in Gabon and the Democratic Republic of Congo. But this virus is a new strain, a previously unknown sister in the Zaire family. And virologist Jens Kuhn at the National Institutes of Health says there may be more.
We might have a lot of variety in these viruses. They might be in many different countries in West Africa and East Africa where we have not heard anything of outbreaks so far.
Kuhn was not part of this research. He leads the top NIH lab studying the world's most dangerous viruses. And he's working on ways to treat and prevent infection with them. Kuhn says there's a lesson in this outbreak.
This is a warning that the variability of these viruses is greater than we knew. And so for it's very, very important that we develop something that is broadly based and not protects only against a particular virus that we knew of before.
Right now, the best protection is to avoid contact with blood or bodily fluids from an infected person. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Many studies have shown that eating too much red meat is bad for your health, but a new study has found that eating processed meat significantly increases the risk of colorectal cancer in some people. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Eating five or more servings per week of processed meat more than doubles the risk of colorectal cancer in people who have certain variants of a specific gene. According to Jane Figueredo of the University of Southern California's Keck School of Medicine, colorectal cancer is a leading form of cancer disease and death worldwide. The findings are based on a meta-analysis of 10 earlier studies involving 18,000 people in the United States, Canada, Australia, and Europe, which looked at the health effects of eating meats that contain nitrates as preservatives.
It's anything that is cured, dried, smoked, cooked, packaged. And so the most common items around the countries we were studying would include bacon, ham, hot dogs, sausages, pate, cold cuts.
The scientists compared the blood samples of some 9,000 people with colorectal cancer to 9,000 people without the disease, looking at one particular region of the genome. Colorectal cancer is a complex illness with some 30 genetic variations tied to an increased risk of developing it. The researchers found that people with two of the genetic variants that were the focus of the study and who ate processed meat almost every day had the highest risk for colorectal cancer. Figueredo says the potentially harmful alleles or changes in a specific gene are extremely common.
It happens in one in three individuals. These individuals are actually even at higher risk of the carcinogenic effect in processed meats.
Does that mean that people with two copies of the genetic variants can eat more bacon and ham than those at the highest cancer risk?
People have asked me that, and I think that we should always limit our consumption of processed meat. It still more modestly increases risk, at least in individuals that don't have this variant allele, but it still is a small effect. It's just a much larger effect among some individuals that carry certain genetic changes.
Her team systematically sifted through millions of genetic variants of the study participants, identifying those that are associated with the effects of meat, fiber, fruit, and vegetable consumption. Figueredo says the investigation is the first to look at whether genes modify the impact of food on health. The study by Jane Figueredo and colleagues is published in the journal PLOS Genetics. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with golf. Defending champions and hosts, South Africa amassed 23 points to retain the Africa Zone 6 Golf Championship crown in Cape Town on Thursday. Runners-up Zimbabwe scored 19 points, while Namibia were third with 15.5 points. Swaziland were fourth, followed by Kenya, Malawi, Mauritius, while Zambia and Uganda are jointly in seventh position, as Botswana and Lesotho shared ninth spot. Turning to football, in an all-Malian encounter, Joliba play AS Real de Bamako in the capital Bamako in Orange Africa Confederations Cup action tomorrow Saturday. Egypt's El Ahly host Morocco's Diana Hassani El Jadidi. Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports and ASEC Mimosa encounter Nigeria's Bayelsa United and South Africa's Kaizer Chiefs respectively. Elsewhere, Congo Brazzaville's AC Leopards play Ghana's Medeama. Cameroon's Cotton Sport encounter Angola's Atletico Petrolios, while Tunisian clubs Etoile du Sahel and Bizertin are away to Guinea's Horoya and Zambia's Nkana, respectively. Meanwhile, FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions Nigeria begin their long journey to their title defense when they play in the regional West Africa Football Union WAFU Under-17 tournament in Lome, Togo from tomorrow, Saturday. Although the tournament is not a qualifier for either the African or FIFA Under-17 tournaments, respectively, the region takes it as a serious event for grooming young talent. Nigeria is seeded in Group B and will play Niger and Mali. Group A features Benin, Ivory Coast, and Togo. In volleyball news, the 10-day Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championship starts in Carthage, Tunisia tomorrow Saturday, where Kenya Prisons are the defending champions. For Africa, this is the first qualifier for the World Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Lausanne, Switzerland later this year. In motorsports, motorcyclists from Ivory Coast will challenge their peers from Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania and hosts Uganda at the FIM African Motocross Championships in Kampala on Sunday. Finally, the East Africa Chess Championships starts in Nairobi, Kenya tomorrow, Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 18th.
As world over commemorate Good Friday today, I pray that the power of the cross will destroy all those obstacles, all those things that lead to the killing of innocent souls in Nigeria and other African countries prone to insurgency. That God, in his infinite mercy, with his grace, will destroy all those things. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okoro Craft, Owo Blue Village, Arutuku in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned a deadly attack on a United Nations compound housing civilians and UN peacekeepers in South Sudan. UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric called the attack on a location where civilians are under UN protection a serious escalation. He also said any attack on peacekeepers is unacceptable and constitutes a war crime. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has held an emergency meeting with his top security officials in the wake of a string of deadly attacks and the abduction of more than 100 schoolgirls. He also met with some of the state governors on Thursday in the capital, Abuja. The World Health Organization said the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has risen to 135. In a Thursday statement, WHO says Guinea's health ministry had reported a total of 122 deaths, while 13 deaths had been reported by Liberian health officials. That's it for this Friday, April 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Dara Smith, I'm James Butte, wishing everybody a very good weekend.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake. Umaru, wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC.
can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.